Hey everybody, I am Jason Shadrick.
I am Nick Millevoy.
And we are here with the first episode of the 100 Guitarists podcast. And we wanted to take a minute and kind of give you some backstories to why we're doing this, what to expect, and hopefully keep you hooked along for all 100 episodes. So we had this idea that we wanted to put together a list of 100 guitar players that we feel like all guitarists should know about, be aware of. Maybe you like all of them, maybe you don't. Maybe you'll discover some new ones that you had maybe heard of but hadn't really dove deep into. So we wanted to put out a few disclaimers here. This is not a ranking. This is not a list of the 100 best. But we feel like if you were aware of these 100, this is going to be like, we're going to be like your tour guides through kind of some foundational players in the history of guitar.
Yeah, and you know, we're gonna open it up quite a bit for a lot of great modern voices of guitar playing to contribute and tell us about their own inspirations. But maybe even more exciting, we're gonna leave it open for you, the listener, to call. Give us your thoughts and maybe argue with us a little bit if things get exciting. So
yes, because we are going to be arguing.
We hope you will.
Yes.
We're going to be arguing with each other.
That's right.
Not today, but probably sooner than later.
Yeah. So if you want to hit us up, you can text us or leave voicemails at our number at the 100 Guitarist Hotline, which is 319-423-9734. So let us know what you think. Let us know who you think should be on the list. We're not going to tell you ahead of time who's going to be on the list, but we are going to tell you who the topic of today's is. Nick, tell us who we're talking about today.
Today, friends, we're talking about Andy Summers. You know him best from The Police. But Andy's had, as we're going to talk about, he's had a long career, gone a lot of places with the guitar and his music. And, you know, we're going to dig into that.
Yes. But first, we want to thank our friends at Electroharmonics for sponsoring today's episode. And they were cool enough to send Nick and I, quite fittingly, one of the new Walking on the Moon flanger filter matrix pedals, which we've played with a little bit. Later in the episode, we're going to talk about some of our favorite settings, But EHX, if you know guitar pedals, they were one of the early big ones. Hendrix used them. You know, they obviously have all the big muff stuff. They've come out with a bunch of new DSP-powered pedals that are really cool. We have a good half dozen of them here in the office. And this Walking on the Moon pedal, I believe, is kind of just like part of the circuit broken out of the Electric Mistress. Is that right, Nick?
I believe
that's,
so. That's what it looks like.
That's my understanding, yes. I am a little more partial to the flanger side rather than the filter matrix side. You have this little switch right here. Boop, 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 boop. But super fun pedal, and it's really, as intended, Andy Summers in a box. So is it a flanger? Is it a chorus? Yes. I always thought that was a chorus I was hearing, which it is quite a bit, but it's pretty incredible what kind of chorusy tones you can get from the Walking on the Moon flanger. So
I've never played an Electric Mistress. That's a little bit of a hole in my vintage pedal playing experience, but so I can't really speak to how closely this emulates that pedal. But I can say that when I plugged this in, I really felt like it sounded a lot like Andy Summers on pretty much every setting.
Oh yeah, I mean I couldn't stop playing that Walking on the Moon chord.
Nice,
which is great. So thanks again for EHX. Head on over to EHX.com. For all your pedal needs. So let's get to it.
Okay.
So tell me, Nick, why does Andy Summers matter?
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about Andy's background before we do anything else. Andy, you know, everybody knows Andy Summers from being in The Police, one of the most famous bands of all time. And, you know, each of the three of them are extremely famous, Sting, Andy, and Stuart Copeland. But before he was in the police, Andy was a member of the Animals. So that's, I think he's only on one record. And, but, you know, he toured with them and played in the Animals for a while. Then after that, he played with Kevin Coyne for a while. Eventually, in the mid to late 70s, Stewart Copeland and Sting were playing in the Police. They'd formed the Police with a different guitar player. And I think the story is that Andy said, "Hey, if you want a better, if you want a better guitar player, give me a call." Something like that. That's the myth I read somewhere on the internet. Maybe it's true. But then with the Police, they released their first record in 1978. That's Outlandos D'Amour. And then they just crank it out from there. Regatta de Blanc is 79, Zenyatta Mandata is 80, Ghost in the Machine is 81, and then they took 2 years to make Synchronicity. And that's their whole studio output. And I think, to me, it's like just thinking about that time period where over 5 years they release all those records is totally crazy. And I think it's important to think about how fast all this stuff happened, because from Outlandos D'Amour to Synchronicity, the band totally evolves, the band totally changes. But more importantly for our purposes, Andy's playing changes, and we're going to dig into that a little bit more.
In those five albums, what are the best three consecutive ones?
For me,
what's the best three album run that the Police ever had?
I'm thinking right in the middle. Regatta and Zenyatta are my two favorites. And I'm thinking, I gotta look at that list and think, do I like Outlandos D'Amour more, or do I like Ghost in the Machine more? And I'm thinking Ghost in the Machine. So yeah. I guess the middle three. How about you?
Yeah, I agree. It wasn't even like a question. By the time we get to Ghost in the Machine and Every Little Thing She Does Is Magic and Invisible Sun and Demolition Man, like, yeah, that's... I mean, his playing on Every Little Thing She Does Is Magic might be some of my top three Police tunes.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Police tunes.
So we'll talk about his playing in more depth over the course of those albums. But, you know, just roughly, it's like Outlandos D'Amour starts, and he's already got his own thing going. And then by the end, it's like totally unique. The Police played their last concerts in 1986 until they got back together in 2007, 2008, did a tour live record. But in the time between those things and since, you know, Andy started a solo career. He did two records with Robert Fripp. I Advance Masked was in 1982. That was the first one. He did a solo record in 1987 called XYZ. And on that one, he sings. It's kind of, to me, that one sounds kind of like a King Crimson meets the Police kind of vibe. And then everything after that, he didn't sing again. He got into this jazz vibe, this jazz sort of experimental, you know, sort of noisy modern jazz kind of approach. Charming Snakes from 1990 is one that I think is really cool, that has Herbie Hancock, Chad Wackerman, Daryl Jones, Bill Evans, and a bunch of other people on there. That's a weird record.
Yeah,
it's a weird record. But for me, one of the records that I first went to of Andy's outside of the Police was 1999's Green Chimneys, which is a Thelonious Monk tribute record. And Sting sings on that one. He sings Round Midnight. He just sings that one track.
Mm-hmm.
And then he also did a Charles Mingus record. And then he's been continuously putting out records, you know, since all this time. He put out one fairly recently. He's also put out a few photo books. He's a photographer. He's put out a book of short stories called Fretted and Moaning, and he also wrote an autobiography that formed the basis for the Police documentary. So Andy's a busy guy. These days, he's still touring. He does this show that's a kind of a combination of all of these things. He plays guitar. He plays guitar with backing tracks. He has his photos going behind him. I think he talks a little bit about the photos, and then he reads some stories from his book. So I've seen that show twice. It's really great. It's a really cool show, and it's cool to see all these parts of his life together in one setting. in one performance. And but today we're here to talk about his guitar playing.
That's right. Yeah, I'm going back to that Monk record. I mean, it's like there's so many Monk tribute records. And that was, I was really kind of, it was my early jazz listening time, late 90s. And that was probably the first time I really like consciously heard Joey DeFrancesco, Erskine, Hank Roberts for sure.
Oh, yeah.
I would have not have come across Hank Roberts in any galaxy before that. But yeah, and I remember like I used to go to the library and like check out CDs and then burn them. Because I didn't know any better. And I just remember the cover that was so cool. I was like, oh, this is a dude from The Police. All right. You know, I'll check it out. It didn't sound like The Police, which I was fine with. Yeah. So that would be one I would. As far as post-Police Andy Summers albums, the two tribute records, The Mingus and The Monk, really. I wish he would do a Wes Montgomery.
Oh, man.
Record.
Yeah.
I mean, that's his dude. I interviewed him once, and that was, we were doing some kind of thing in PG where we had a bunch of guitar players talk about, I think their first album, and we talked about Wes for about 10, 15 minutes, and he was very excited to talk about Wes. He just loves talking about Wes Montgomery.
That's awesome.
All right, but now we have a voicemail, right?
Yes, we have a voicemail. I just want to say, for me, the thing about that Monk record that I think is so striking, and that anybody listening to this who hasn't checked it out might be a good draw for them, is that like I know when I first heard that, I was a rock and roll guitar player who was trying to find my way into jazz, and it just like bebop just didn't really make sense to me. I was trying to learn, you know, I was learning tunes, learning some Charlie Parker solos, and just like that, the two things, it was like learning a different instrument somehow. And then I heard Andy Summers play Monk tunes sounding like himself, sounding like Andy Summers from The Police, not sounding like some guy who's good at guitar playing jazz guitar with a different voice. Like it sounded, you could hear it and know that it was him. And I thought that was so cool. And I think that really inspired me as like, you know, in a way to find my way into those tunes that are so great. So anyway, Andy nails that. So we're going to talk a little bit more about Andy's guitar playing, and, you know, to jump off there, we have our friend Anthony Pierog. He plays in the band, The Mesthetics. He called in, left us a voicemail, to talk about, you know, what Andy Summers and Andy Summers' playing means to him. Fun little thing here is that Anthony just released an album called the Nepenthe Series Volume 1, and he did a collaboration on one of the tracks. He has a bunch of great collaborators on the album. And on one of the tracks, he has Andy Summers. I think they co-wrote the song, but they worked on it together in some way. And the song is called Inflorescence. So that's definitely worth checking out. And here's what Anthony has to say about Andy Summers.
When I first got to music school, this is the pre-internet, I went to the music library and I was digging through records. And the first record I listened to was Andy's record where he plays all Monk. So it was very inspiring for me to see someone who played popular music also play jazz. And then later, as I was getting into guitar synths, I was doing research about 80s guitar synths. I came across his demo from the 80s on the Roland GR-300. So I'm also very inspired by his dedication to the timbres that are available to the guitar and exploring and experimenting with tones. His more recent work also is very inspiring because there's lots of stereo delays and very modern guitar sounds at play. And yeah, obviously the duo stuff with Fripp is great, and I love that. And it's also very inspiring that his creativity isn't limited to just music. He's an author. His book of short stories is fantastic. And I just saw his solo show of, I think, last fall in Virginia. And it was just such an engaging evening of photography, solo guitar playing and storytelling. It was just overwhelming to see so many sides that a creative person has to offer. So when I think of Andy, I think of, you know, I think of how inspired I've been for decades by his work. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Anthony.
So Anthony likes that record too.
A couple
fans right here.
And he's like our age, right? Anthony is?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think
that hit our generation.
Guitar players, yeah, of a generation, that was the thing. It was like this all-star jazz record. Maybe he had just like a really good marketing department around. I don't know.
I do think it's on a major label. It must be, right? Sting's on there.
Right. So now we're getting to why does Andy Summers playing matter? And to me, it's his sound. You know, he was in a three-piece, so he had to be pretty creative for the type of pop music the Police was playing and songs Sting was writing. He definitely felt drawn to using modulation in a bigger way and as a central part of that. So to me, it's like it's how he used modulation, and then it's the types of really chord voicings he used, because he's not so known as like a, I don't say a blazing single note player. He did have some single note stuff, but to me, he's more of a chord and part player than like if you're like, hey, play an Andy Summers lick. I don't know if a lot of those come to mind, although they were sprinkled throughout. And
yeah, the stuff you talk about when you talk about Andy Summers is the riffs,
right. You
the
know,
parts.
And I'm thinking it's like 60% parts, 40% tone, right? Because one of the videos that we're going to link to in the bottom is him, Jules Holland is interviewing him, I think around Ghost in the Machine. And it looks like they're outside. Andy has his rig set up and he's showing Jules Holland this part. I can't remember what part it was, playing this part. And then Jules is like, so what would that sound like if you turn all this stuff off? And so Andy dutifully does that and just gives like this look of contempt at Jules. Like, why would you ever play these parts without having this sound? You know what I mean? Like, I specifically put these things together to create something that's bigger than the sum of its parts. Why would you ever do this? And just the, like, you just feel Andy like cringing as he's playing a dry, where maybe I can't remember the riff he's playing, but he's playing this dry riff and it's just like, this is why I don't do this. And then he clicks everything back on. He's like, oh, good. That's much better. You know,
it's like asking a synthesizer player to play something on a piano or on like play it on this toy piano here. What's that sound like? It's like, well, it's going to be the same notes, but you're kind of missing the point.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, check out that video if you want to see Andy just like stare a hole through Jules Holland and say, bro. And then the other thing he does in that video, ask him about his influences. He's like, yeah, you know, I listened to Coltrane, I listened to some Ornette or something, blah, blah. And then Jules immediately follows up with, yeah, but what about jazz? You're just like, Jules, buddy, come on. I don't know
come
what
Come on, man, wake up.
Wake up, buddy, wake up. Come on.
You hit the nail right on the head there. It's like Andy's parts and Andy's sound. That's the thing. And I do love, like, there are solos that he takes. There are a couple versions, like any version of the song Bring on the Night, one of my favorites. There's a break in the middle where he takes, on the record, he takes this, like, he takes his solo and it's like a long feedback note before he plays anything. And then when he finally plays some notes, it's just a couple of notes. It's all about that feedback note. But if you watch live versions, he always approaches that improvisationally. It always changes what he plays there. And it's always like something you totally don't expect him to do. And I think that that's such a cool, like, sort of sideways take on like solo sections. There are some solos that he takes. He plays some guitar solos that are like traditional guitar solos. Mm-hmm. And on one of the videos we'll link, he's even like playing some blues licks. But that's like so not
slide at that.
Yeah, slide blues. And but that's so not the Andy Summers thing. It's like he's created this vocabulary for himself. So earlier today, getting ready for this, playing around with the Walking on the Moon flanger, I thought, all right, I'm going to play a song, a Police song I've never played before. So I put on Synchronicity 2, and I learned it top to bottom. And just thinking about the riffs he plays on Synchronicity 2, which isn't really like, I don't go to that place in my brain. Like you mentioned the Walking on the Moon guitar part earlier, the chords. It's like, I think about those. I think about Message in a Bottle or... I don't know, or, you know, Every Breath You Take or something. I think about the riffs, those riffs. Mm-hmm. I don't think about Synchronicity 2 as like this heavy guitar-y song because it's such an ensemble piece. But I thought, I'm going to learn these, each of these riffs. Man, they're so cool. They're all only a couple notes. There's barely anything to them, but I would never write something like that. Like even as a lifelong Andy Summers fan, I would never approach if somebody came to me and said, I wrote this song, here's how it goes, and like, you know, played the chords or however Sting might, you know, approach that. Sing the parts and say, here, come up with a guitar part. I would never be able to come up with like what Andy comes up with there. And it's so simple.
And you have to play those parts with that sound. Like,
yes,
that's the thing.
It's, oh, yeah.
You know, you can play, I mean, you can play Wes Montgomery solos through a Marshall half stack. I mean, that's how Fusion was born, whatever. Like, but you just, like, those parts are so tied to that sound. He might be one of the top five guitar players of all time where if you're not nailing that sound, it doesn't sound as good, you know? And that's probably a cliche thing to say, but there are a lot of guitar players. Like, you always said, oh, if you were to play through Eddie Van Halen's rig, you would sound like you. Totally. But I feel like there's a bit of a disconnect there when you talk about Andy Summers' parts. Like, they have to sound, those parts and those tunes have to sound like that. Although I would totally be up for like Matias Asado doing like an entire album of solo electric guitar Police tunes.
Whoa.
Like that. I think it would sound great. Very different. That would be so great. And since Matias is a huge fan of the podcast on our first episode, I'll be looking for that soon.
Yeah, call in, Mateus. Tell us.
Call in. So let's go to our next section here where we talk about where do we notice his influences pop up. And the one that hits my heart.
We might have some disagreement on this a little bit, potentially.
You're saying, so for me, I mean, Dave Matthews is why I play guitar. That he was the guy that made me want to play guitar. So the natural one is Satellite, I think. That's probably the closest to like, successful song to Message in a Bottle.
Yeah.
And I remember like hearing that riff.
I wasn't sure if you were with me on that connection. I am, but Andy and Dave.
But I wonder if I might get to ask in the not too distant future, I might have a chance to ask Dave that direct question.
We're going to have to circle back on that.
I will report back. But I honestly would be. I would be kind of surprised if Dave is like, yeah, you know, I like the Police. I'm sure he probably likes the Police. I don't know if he would ever cite it as like a prime influence in a way, you know?
It's interesting. And I guess to me, I hear it so strong because I also think that Carter Beauford sounds like Stuart Copeland.
That to me is further away.
Interesting.
That's for, yeah. I mean,
you got to get with Dave. Talk to him about this.
There's a more than 0% chance I will get to ask Uncle Dave his thoughts on Andy Summers. Because, I mean, Dave hasn't done a lot of guitar-centric interviews in his life, really. And I don't remember him really speaking about that a lot. So, yes, I will. And, hey, if Dave, you're listening to this, here's our number. Here's our email, buddy. Drop us a text. See what we can do.
But yeah, Andy Summers' influence goes much beyond that into pretty much influencing the sound of 80s guitar.
Yeah. I mean, he did chorus the best. He did modulation the best.
Yeah.
Like, when you think of even in the late 80s, when you get to those like hair metal power ballads and you hear that big chorusy clean guitar, I mean, that wouldn't be as prevalent, I don't think, if it wasn't for Andy Summers.
No, you know? Totally. I'm even thinking, like, not necessarily chorus tones, like specifically, but I think like REM, all the sussy stuff that suspended chord stuff that Peter Buck would do with the 12 string.
Suspicious.
We'll talk about him later, Jason.
Yeah. He's not listening to this. So
what's the peak?
What's the peak? For me, it's very, very easy, and I'm not just saying this, but it's the first chord in Walking on the Moon. His first chord, that G7 suspended chord, I think is what it is. I'm pretty sure it's what it is. And, I mean, when you hit that chord with maybe you're playing it through your EHX Walking on the Moon, but even if you have just a chorus sound going on through your JC120 that Andy would approve of, that's just like you hit that chord and you're like, uh-huh, that's it, that's Andy Summers, you know. And I'm not like diminishing his entire recorded output to that chord, but that has to be one of the most identifiable chord entrances in a song in his whole career. I mean, really,
to be able to do, okay, so it's like, you know, if on one hand is like playing an identifiable lick that you just shred and totally destroy, and then it's like, wow, that's this person's thing, I can hear their vocabulary in there, that's like one end of the spectrum. The other end is like you are so aligned with your tone and your sound, it is such a like a distilled part of a player's identity if they can literally just strum a chord and everybody goes, oh, that's who that is.
Yeah.
So yeah. I'm with you there. For me, it's like, I think my personal peak, like within his output, I think I might go to Zenyatta Mandata a little bit more for the guitar stuff. That might be just nostalgic because I spent a lot of time with that album thinking about his guitar playing on there. But something I think is really cool about that is on the track Behind My Camel, which is apparently the first solo composition he wrote, you know, not as a collaborative thing. I guess they were writing stuff together, but that was the first piece he wrote everything for. He plays bass on it. Sting doesn't play bass. Why doesn't Sting play bass on that song? I don't know. But then Andy goes ahead and wins the 1982 Grammy for Best Rock Instrumental Performance. First song he ever wrote, winning a Grammy for it. Playing all the parts. I mean, not the drum part, but playing all the guitar parts.
You think Sting's mad? Do you think Sting got a Grammy for that? Probably. Oh,
because he's a member of the band.
Yeah.
If anybody knows, give us a holler.
I mean, I would think like the Police won the Grammy, right?
The Police probably won the Grammy, not Andy. It's not credited to Andy Summers.
Or I wonder if it's one of those like weird like songwriting categories where like the writer of the song or the composition.
Well, it's instrumental performance. Oh, we got to get to the bottom of
this. We got to know. Yeah. Okay. If anybody knows if Sting actually got a Grammy in 1982 for the best rock instrumental performance, we have to know this. Have to know this.
All right, Jason. What's the biggest what if?
The biggest what if is what if Sting and Andy Summers switched instruments, would they be as big? Played the same songs, would they be as big as they are? And I would say no. They would be successful. They would be a really good mid-tier opener. Mm-hmm. You know, they'd be opening for the Pretenders or whatever.
I bet they would have had a hit.
They'd had a hit. Well, they'd have the same songs. That's the thing.
Yeah, but they're not all, I don't know, I don't think they're clicking the same way.
If but
Sting
if
wrote Roxanne,
songs,
I think they could have gotten Roxanne together. You know, like
that
would have been a hit,
part.
But I don't know that they would have had more hits than that.
Yeah, I think
because so. We're not talking about Sting here. And, you know, I think that a lot of some of the magic of the Police is like, a lot of things we're saying about Andy Summers, you could say about Sting and his bass playing and his singing.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'd say they're a very big club theater act, not an arena act.
Yeah. I'm with you.
What's your biggest what if?
Oh, I'm just, I like that what if.
I would love if, because the interesting thing is all three guys in the police are definitely, well, they definitely have like a fair amount of jazz in their playing. Mm-hmm. You know, what would like a police album, like what if police did like a jazz standards record? I don't know.
I don't know. I don't know what I think about that.
I mean, it'd be really produced. It'd have a lot of chorus on it. Mike Stern would love it.
Yeah.
Man, what would that sound like if the police made "Here's Stella" by Starlight? And it could be just instrumental. Like anyone even had to sing. He could rest the pipes. Rest the pipes.
Well, again, we're going back to the Andy Monk record where Sting sings "Round Midnight." Right.
I feel, what if he saved "Behind My Camel" for that record? That was the title track of the record, "Behind My Camel." And it was like, it was "Behind My Camel." It was all the things, you know, kind of like what Matheny did with Question and Answer, where he's like, we're just going to set up and we're just going to call tunes and play. And Stewart horrendously overplays. The tempos are way too fast. Sting's leaning back too much. When Andy would go into a solo, the bottom would kind of fall out a little bit because he's playing a straight ahead guitar solo and there's no like real chordal accompaniment underneath him. But maybe he'd dig that. I mean, and it'd only be an EP because they could never agree. There'd be too many fights for them.
They couldn't agree with you.
They couldn't agree, and they'd break up, and we'd have one less police record. I think that's a really good what if. Like that one better than mine. You're welcome. You're welcome.
All right, world.
All right.
That's what we think.
Half-ass gear research. Which,
okay.
These type of days, it doesn't need to be half-assed. I mean, we see YouTube videos with what the, and pictures.
So it's like the thing we normally associate with Andy is his telly with his neck humbucker. And when I see those guitars, that's what I think about. But he did also play some other guitars in the police. That's not the only thing he played. That's just mostly what he played. He also had his 61 Strat. I always thought it was cool when I've seen pictures of him with his Hamer Standard, which is like the Gibson Explorer style Hamer. I couldn't
shout out to Joel Jantz. Shout out to Joel Danzig.
Yeah, yeah.
Premier guitar columnist.
Played an ES-335. I don't know if he used that. Oh, I think he did use that. There's some police video where he's using it. And then later in the 80s, there's some pictures of him playing a Klein, a headless guitar, which was sort of all the rage at the time.
Right.
But yeah, the telly with the neck humber is really... The telly with the neck humbucker is really the thing I think of when I think of Andy's guitar thing.
Sunburst telly, neck humbucker, you're good to go.
Yeah.
JC-120, Marshall head.
The JC-120 thing is so interesting to me because he's using it in combination. It's like there's the Marshall. It's always next to the JC-120 when you see it. And I think you started first just using Marshalls. Am I right about that?
Yeah.
I think so, right? Yeah. And then he added the JC-120. And anytime I've played a gig or done a rehearsal where there's a JC-120 backline amp and I plug into it before I play anything, it has nothing to do with what I'm playing. Somebody's going to look at it and go, oh, JC-120, Andy Summers.
That's right. Why is there not a signature JC-120 for Andy Summers?
It doesn't make sense.
I mean, my only guess is that he just used stock ones, so it's not like...
Yeah.
It's not like they could do anything special to it to make it a signature model. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, obviously with something like this... Like
have
this,
him sign it.
This pedal technically didn't really exist, right?
Right.
You know, in its current... Right? So that makes sense. But, yeah, man, JC-120. Andy Sum. And maybe it's just like, it's a something where like his setting is like programmed in. So you just like hit a button and boom, there's his favorite chorus setting or something like that.
What did we skip? We skipped his pedals. So he used that GR300 synth.
Yeah. And then the Cornish thing,
mm-hmm.
Which was all the rage back in that day. The Pete Cornish, you know, and I'm assuming the way it looks like is he just sent Pete a bunch of pedals and Pete just built it into a bulletproof, basically road case that they can just lift the top off and plug in. There you go. It was a precursor to the Helix, you know?
So while we're talking about pedals, we both had some time
yes.
to play with the Walking on the Moon flanger. I got to say, I plugged it in and I felt like it sounded like Andy Summers right away. I wasn't like, let me search for the sound. Anything I found, I could like associate to some track. But I did mess around with some songs. Like I said, I was playing Synchronicity 2. I also was playing, I feel like da-da-da-da has yep. a very prominent flanger tone. And so here, I got that dialed in right here. This is what I think Andy would have used if he had recorded da-do-do-do, da-da-da-da.
Hold it up.
With the Walking on the Moon flanger. So
there we go.
See that?
That's yeah. it.
So I'm on the flanger side. I got the color just a little bit past noon. I got the range about 10 o'clock there. And I got the rate about 11 o'clock. When I hit that A sus 2 chord, I was just like, there
boom.
Yeah.
So, I wasn't trying to like necessarily cop a tone from one of the records. I just wanted to find my favorite setting. And okay. I vibed more with the flanger side, like I said, than the filter matrix side. And these were my preferred settings, a little different.
Okay.
And anything in that neighborhood, you hit that Walking on the Moon chord, I'm telling you, forget about it. You know, forget about it. That's my favorite. I can just play a whole tune just around that chord. That's what I'm down with. All right. What do we have next? We have
a fake award.
We have a fake award. Well, also, let's say we are going to make a playlist of our favorite Andy Summers tracks.
Yes.
Link for that down below. So hit that. Let us know what we missed. So check that out. Fake award time before we play yet another voicemail and wrap things up. So if we were to invent a fake award for Andy, what would it be, Nick?
Oh, man. So I've changed my mind about this a couple times. I want to say, just based on my own experience, best association with a piece of gear, parentheses, not exclusive. Meaning,
that's not going to fit on the trophy.
Yeah, it's not going to fit on the trophy. No. But that's just my JC120 thing. Just like, that's not even the only amp he used. But everybody says that about him. But I really think it's just best modulation tone.
Yeah, I mean, I think best use of modulation in the 80s. I mean, yeah. He could have invented modulation for like, I mean, he basically did. And he was there. I mean, when we talk about 80s guitar tones, I mean, he was starting in 78. With that business.
Yeah.
And he was very hopping on that early. He's like, ooh, swirly swirlies, let's go.
And it's, you know, it's like the best use of modulation, not just like because it sounds cool, but it's like he crafted his parts to the modulation, to
yeah.
flanging
oh, yeah.
and to chorus sounds. Like his parts are written to use that. Going back to what you're saying about the Jules Holland thing is like when he asked him to turn the pedals off. This
no
is
bueno,
part
bro.
Of the instrument, man.
I do imagine like when he wrote these parts, he was probably writing them with the sound, not even in mind. Like I think he probably wrote them with the sound going.
Yeah,
like
maybe.
That'd be one question I'd want to ask him. We should shoot an email to him, see if we can ask him some questions and report back.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think you're nailing the head. Inventor of modulation. He has an honorary doctorate in modulation, yeah. Let's say. You know. Cool. All right. Well, I think we covered... we're going to put a bunch of other links down below of videos we like, other things we talked about, our one of our most legendary interviews in Premier Guitar lore, which is Andy Summers' Classic Bozo interview, which if you haven't read that, shout out to Adam Perlmutter for asking the tough journalistic questions. What everybody wants to know. And if you don't know what we're talking about, hit that link below and it is well worth your time.
Yeah, you want to check that one.
We also want to shout out Waters-ish. There's a link below. Nice summary of Andy's rig with some pictures from the police era and some other stuff. And the Jules Holland video will drop in there. We'll have your Bring on the Night and Driven to Tears stuff that we talked about, the live in Hamburg. So after you're done watching this, go down below, hit those links, and let us know what you think. You can let us know what you think. Our phone number, you can text or call us at 319-423-9734.
And when you call in, if you leave us a good voicemail, you know, keep an eye on social media. We'll send out some prompts for stuff we need to collect. If you leave us a good voicemail, you may appear on a future episode of the 100 Guitars Pod, just like our friend Dave Cousy from the band Microwaves in Pittsburgh. He called in to tell us about his thoughts on Andy Summers. Here's what Dave had to say.
Ghost in the Machine was probably either the first or the second record I bought with my own money, you know, back when it came out. As someone who had probably only otherwise heard fairly normal rock and pop guitar players on the radio at the time, it was kind of a revelation. Andy can certainly do, like, normal rock and pop stuff, and you know, even a song like Demolition Man on that album is kind of, like, bluesy soloing all the way through. But he did a bunch of other stuff on there, and I know he has been down on that record here and there in interviews, you know, due to the influx of keyboards and horns. But, you know, I think he certainly managed to fit the guitar in with all that stuff pretty well. I think he's also, songwriter-wise, he's a bit underrated. You know, Omega Man from that record, which he wrote, it's a great song. Don't know if Sting felt that way, but I guess it all worked out in the end. Regarding other, like, non-standard stuff that he does, I think Mother is a great song from Synchronicity. I use the solo from that as part of my warm-up every time I sit down to practice, just about. His other work is pretty interesting, too. I have a record that he played on with Robert Fripp, I Advanced Masked, and it's just great. It's maybe you might refer to it as resourceful. You know, it's two guitar players, you know, went into the studio to make a record, you know, no drummer, but they handled all that stuff themselves. There's some percussion, there's electronic drums that they did. You know, it's kind of a Swiss Army knife. He can kind of do all of it.
All right. Well, thank you, Dave, for calling in and sharing your thoughts on Andy Summers. So don't be shy, folks. Keep an eye on our social media. Keep listening. Tell us what you think. Argue with us. Get ready to join in some arguments coming up. Yeah. What else we got here, Jason? Miss anything?
We have one down. We have 99 to go. Spoiler, next week we're going to talk about Dave Gilmour. One.